podcast where we're just kind of sitting around because, you know, there's no baseball the past couple days for whatever reason, because the All-Star break is very confusing. And Bud Selig is a mind that few can really comprehend or understand, not for the right reasons. I'm Andrew Murns here with Matt Provenzano and Matt Ferencik. How are you guys doing?
Bored.
Yeah, I wish there was baseball.
Yeah, I've commented about this before, but I just don't understand why they just hide the Futures game on a Sunday afternoon and they can't just put it on one of these nights, or just move stuff around to at least get some baseball going. But
I think that there was some rule that I read in the CBA about the exhibition games have to have a certain amount of days in between real baseball games. I think it was something like there needs to be 2 days, like, in between the exhibition games.
Of course, like, the Futures game doesn't really impact the actual Major League exhibition games, though.
No. What they could do is, if they were really concerned about that, is they could make the Futures game after the All-Star game and then start the minor league schedule a day later and, like, start. So you'd have 1 day with Major League Baseball and no minor league baseball. And then the following day, you'd have Major League Baseball, if that's what they want. I don't know.
Yeah, they can really do whatever they want with the minor leaguers. Like, they don't have a collective bargaining.
Exactly. They have no union, so they can, yeah, they can do whatever they want.
But, oh well. Instead, we get the ESPYs and nothing today.
There's Canadian football.
There's the Yankees signing Rich Hill to pitch for Scranton.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
Championship.
Championship acquired.
Pride, power, pinstripes.
I mean, I think we clinched the pennant with the signing of Jeff Francis on, I think, Saturday. But this will put them over the top.
All we have to do is somehow get our hand on Brad Mills.
Just making his way around.
And then we've got ourselves rotation.
Yeah. Of course, the rotation is a very, very depressing place right now, because the day after we recorded the podcast last week, it was reported that Masahiro Tanaka was going to get an MRI on his elbow, and of course, he got the bad news eventually that there's a partial tear, and he will be gone for at least 6 weeks, and possibly the next season and a half if the rehab doesn't go well.
Yeah, I'm just gonna return this segment about the Tour de France.
Yeah, so Tour de France.
Yeah,
That's a thing.
There's a Italian guy leading.
What's his name?
Vincenzo Nibali.
Ah. Fine. Can he pitch?
Sure.
Can he get on base?
Does he have the Does he have the extra 2%? Get that competitive advantage. No one knew about his pitching skills since he was on the bike, but while he was biking, he built up leg core strength, and now all of a sudden he's going to be a terrific pitcher.
Yeah, Billy Bean saw him riding his bike and realized that he could convert him into a shutdown reliever.
Like Sean Doolittle.
Exactly.
But in reality, Yankees don't have Tanaka, might not have him for the rest of the season. Hopefully he'll respond to the platelet-rich plasma therapy, but there's no telling, obviously, how that'll go. We'll just have to wait and see. And in the meantime, the rotation is very, very concerning.
What rotation?
Yes, we have, Hiroki Kuroda and Brandon McCarthy are okay. But after that, you have a bunch of wild cards with David Phelps, who's up and down. Shane Green, who was really good in his two starts. But, you know, he's still young. You don't know if that's just small sample size noise or what that is. And then there's the fifth spot, which is currently occupied by Chase Whitley, but somehow I have a sneaking suspicion that probably won't last for very long.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't... See, the thing is this wouldn't bother me as much if the team was hitting.
Right.
Like, if Beltran was hitting and McCann was hitting and Teixeira is hitting, but if everybody was hitting as they have in the past, this wouldn't really bother me as much, because you figure Phelps at least keeps you in the game.
right?
Reasonably speaking, and Kuroda and McCarthy are decent. Like they'll keep you. They'll. So you're thinking at least 3 of 5 nights you're in the game, and then you figure that the offense can try to pick you up on days 4 and 5. So, but when the offense isn't doing anything, it's like you don't even know if you're going to win those 3 of 5 games where you have a maybe decent starting performance, and then days 4 and 5 are like, all right, white flag.
Right. The offense is just not doing much scoring. And right now it's like Brett Gardner, Jacoby Ellsbury, and not really much else. Occasionally it's a Teixeira thinger, but McCann might be heating up, but who knows.
Yeah, he's had a decent past 4 weeks.
And he's also, I know there's that whole thing about his removal of the toe tap that he had in his swing that supposedly helped his timing. I don't know if that's a real thing.
Maybe.
Or that's just noise.
Yeah.
Maybe that's all it takes. Maybe he just, you know, thinks about it, like, and he thinks that it helped him, and then he gets on a roll, and it helps him. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. And Jeter's been hitting well over the past month, too. And I think Brian Roberts has actually been okay, but they don't really seem to just get it all lined up. Like, maybe eventually, you know, odds are they will, just because McCann's a better hitter than this. And Jeter, while he's 40, is still probably got a little bit left in the tank, at least at the plate. So,
yeah, I think he said that there was an interview pre All-Star game where he was talking about how he even admitted that his timing wasn't fully down.
Right.
Because just, you know, missing an entire season, you just don't get in a good rhythm.
It's hard. Yeah.
And he said, he said that as the season would go on, he would probably get better. I don't know. I don't know if I want to take his word for it, but at least you have a anecdotal evidence as to why he's struggling.
Mm-hmm. And again, he has played well over the past month, so hopefully that can continue. And they're really going to need their offense to pick them up with Tanaka on the shelf indefinitely. And we don't know when Pineda comes back exactly, or what Pineda would even bring if he does come back. So maybe he can be the guy who dominated those first 3 starts, but, you know, again, 3 starts. It's almost as many starts as Shane Green has.
Didn't he have more starts than that?
No, Pineda...
4. He had... it was just 4.
I'm only really counting it as 3 because the 4th is the one where he got ejected.
Oh, yeah, that's
like
right.
The second inning.
I mean, the thing is, he's still a legit pitcher, even if he's... Those 4 starts were noise. It's not like Chase Whitley where he was pitching over his head and we knew it.
Well, then again, I'm sure if Pineda's not, like, his ERA was, like, 1.5 or something like that, so he's not quite
His FIP was, like, a whole point higher, so...
If he even starts a game for the rest of the season, I'll consider that a success, just because he's such a wild card, considering he can't seem to stay healthy.
Yeah, so I guess this would be my next question. So let's say you have worst-case scenario, Tanaka has to get Tommy John surgery, he's out for all of next season. It's obviously in the back of everybody's mind. Kuroda is not going to be Yankee next year. We pretty much know that.
I don't know if we know that, but
we don't know that. But I don't think he will be.
I would say 50-50 at this point. Anyway, go ahead with this.
Yeah, so let's assume that Kuroda's a question mark.
Right.
CeCe Sabathia's a question mark.
Oh,
what do you do with the rotation? Do you stand pat? Do you sign a John Lester or Max Scherzer? Or do you try to find some internal option? Maybe like a Jose Ramirez, maybe Adam Warren?
I don't think they're going to try Jose Ramirez in the rotation again. I think they've already said he's going to be a reliever. And he can't even stay healthy now because he has a lat injury. I think they will almost certainly sign a starter in the offseason, just given the current state of the rotation.
Yeah. Now, do you think that starter is going to be a frontline starter, or do you think that's going to be someone like, I don't know, like in the same tune of the Ricky Nolasco signing where it's like 4 years, $45 million?
I don't know. I would have to like see who is the free agent next year. But
yeah, I mean,
I could see them breaking the bank for like a John Lester if he does go to free agency.
Yeah, I'm gonna see what the MLB Trade Rumors has the top 2015 starting pitchers. So the free agents, John Lester, Justin Masterson, Irvin Santana, Max Scherzer, and James Shields. Those are the main ones, if I'm not mistaken.
J.A. Happ. Why does it say Hisashi Iwakuma? That doesn't sound right. Maybe they have, like, an option?
Say, there's an option in his deal, so...
Oh, yeah, then that'll get picked up. Yeah, I feel like the Yankees would go after one of the bigger names.
So you're saying a Shield or a Scherzer or a Lester?
I think they would definitely go after a Lester if he became available. I think Scherzer might ask for a bit too much, but...
Yeah.
I mean, knowing what the Yankees just did last offseason, I don't think that would, like, stop them from getting a Scherzer if they really wanted to. But my guess is that if the Red Sox let Lester go to free agency, then the Yankees might pounce all over him.
Just because it's, like, almost double the game, because you're taking wins away from your opponent.
Right, and, the classic lefty in Yankee Stadium.
He's having his best year this year.
Oh, he is? Okay, so maybe I was thinking...
Yeah, he's already produced as much F4 as he has all of last season already.
Oh, that doesn't suck.
Yeah, so he is on pace to have a 6.6 F4 season.
Hmm.
And I'm going to see what that is by RA9 war, if you're so inclined by that. He's so far had a 3 RA9 war season. So not as good if you're looking at RA9 war, but F4, he's striking on 9.3 per 9 and only has allowed 2 walks per 9.
Also available is the artist formerly known as Fausto Carmona. Roberto Hernandez. And Ryan Dempster.
Oh, put
Ryan Dempster on the same team as A-Rod and eat the popcorn. Anyway, they're going to be in dire straits if Tanaka does indeed have Tommy John surgery. And
yeah.
2015 is already looking to be like... I have no idea what to expect. I barely know what to expect for the rest of this season, let alone 2015.
Yeah, 2015 I have no... I mean, they're not... They're going to basically have holes at second base, shortstop, yep. Third base, we don't even know what the deal with A-Rod is. Right field, like 3 or 4 starting pitching positions, and then the closer.
Possibly, yeah.
So it's like, that's like most of the team.
I think they could really struggle in like attendance and ratings next year if they don't rate themselves. Because I think Yes Network tweeted out today something like that viewership was up like 600, was up a lot from last year. But I'm sure, yeah, it's the Jeter farewell tour boost, just like last year got the Mariano Rivera farewell tour boost. They're not coming back next year, and your longest tenured player now is like one of Cervelli or Gardner, possibly Robertson. So
yeah, so I guess they're going to be forcing somebody to retire and have another retirement tour.
It's like, so is it time to retire, Francisco? What? Francisco,
yeah.
Cervelli retirement,
so,
tour.
Big man cracks knuckles. It's like, so I hear you're thinking about retirement.
It's like, let's face it, Francisco. You don't really have the health history to, you know, hang around. Why don't you just retire now? We'll give you a tour. People will give you gifts around the major leagues. The Rockies would be like...
For being a below-average backup catcher.
2009 World Series champion. He did not appear on the playoff roster.
He was kind of replacement level and hurt most of the time. He was suspended for steroid use.
He spent all of but 2 games of 2012 in the minor leagues. And they traded for Chris Stewart over him. Francisco Cervelli! He's like,
you have a good point that next year, I don't know, they're in a really bad position because they went all out this year thinking they would get to the playoffs, and now they're in a worse position next year because they already spent a ton of money and they're pretty much going to be in a much worse position. So they're just going to continue to dig themselves in this hole, and they can't afford not to win, but they can't afford to lose either. Like, they can't afford to tank.
Right.
So it's like they're in a very, very bad spot.
And their most talented prospects are not close, really, to the major leagues yet.
No, the closest one would be Lindgren, actually, and he's just going to be a reliever.
Or maybe Severino, but he's just starting in Double-A.
Yeah, he's probably not. I would say he'll be in, if he were to follow a standard track, he probably wouldn't be up until 2016, like June.
Yeah. I mean, there's also Rhett Snyder who could be up.
Regal, yes, music.
Yes, Regal, yes.
Regal. Yeah, it's definitely not going to be fun to be in the Yankees front office because you're in that you don't want to turn into the Phillies, you know?
No, you don't.
But pretty close to being the Phillies. They're like one bad move or one bad season away from turning into the Phillies.
5-year contract extension for Mark Teixeira. I would only be okay with that if that meant more foul territory.
Sure. I could see him being a broadcaster. That'd be cool with that.
Well, that survey thing that went out with the Wall Street Journal about Yankees players, they said that they thought Teixeira would be most likely to enter broadcasting after his career ends.
Yeah, I'd be cool with that.
I just hope that he does more like...
I'd be fine with that.
And then basically every single day of every single broadcast, they have to show him hitting that walk-off home run against the Twins. it's just... Because you know how many times John Flaherty, they play that grand slam against the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Well, like every time they play the Red Sox.
Or it's the walk-off hit in like the 14th, that the Jeter diving game. I bet that's got some airtime left.
Yep. So you can imagine what the Teixeira walk-off home run would have. I mean, granted, they would probably not even mention the fact that A-Rod tied the game in the 9th.
Nope.
I could see A-Rod going into broadcasting.
That'd be awesome.
A-Rod will start like his own pirate feed of all the of MLB TV and commentate on that.
Like, hey guys, I'm here with my lawyer and fellow analyst Joe Tacopina. Hey, yo.
It would be exactly the same as MLB.TV, but just cost half the price.
Oh man, that's the dream. A-Rod.TV. Make it happen. Get it done, Alex.
Oh, we digress.
Yeah, now we're off on a tangent, but at least that amuses us. I have no idea what the hell A-Rod's going to do next year either, but we could talk about that another time.
We just decided.
Yeah, that's true. He's going to become an internet mogul pirate.
And he has to wear an eye patch.
Yeah. Or, no, he's going to be commissioner.
A-Rod becomes a weird version of Mark Zuckerberg.
No, he's going to become commissioner because Seelig's retiring, and he's going to name A-Rod as his replacement. Ultimate twist. They were in cahoots the whole time. But we would be remiss if we didn't discuss the All-Star Game festivities with Jeter at all. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too.
Yep.
It was about as enjoyable as the Rivera game was last year, the All-Star Game. And
yeah.
I could understand some people getting miffed by how many times they talked about Jeter. I know Deadspin did like a video of like 100 times the Jeter on the broadcast. But
yeah,
I wouldn't know. I had the game muted for most of it.
That's fair. But
yeah, I mean
the tributes from like the players and like baseball as a whole were pretty good. I like that.
I mean, the thing is here's the way I see it. When you think about players that were really famous, and especially ones that were like cultural icons, I mean, you think about the days that they were honored. Imagine if they had like the Lou Gehrig day, but like had it today with like Fox and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, just imagine how many times they'd like say his name and like focus on it, and like, or like any of those type of players, like a Willie Mays, or they would be like all over them.
Right.
I think it's just because it's amplified because there's so much media coverage.
Yeah, and like everyone wasn't on Twitter in 2001 to talk about like Cal Ripken or whatever.
Exactly. So, yep. But the thing is, it has to happen. Like, you have, you know, Derek Jeter is not just a baseball icon. It's like he could go anywhere, and people would know who he was. Like, see him and like people are not going to recognize. As great as Mike Trout is, people are not going to recognize him on the street, probably.
Probably not, no.
And that's kind of the point of Derek Jeter, is that people who don't care about baseball will be interested in what he's doing and, like, watch him on ESPN because they're interested in what he's doing with the Yankees. And, like, Yankee...
Of course, it's Saturday Night Live.
It's true.
Yeah. And the thing is that the baseball has become incredibly regional, where people are watching their team only, and baseball amplifies this with all those blackouts that they have, but Derek Jeter is like one of the main components of things that kind of nationalizes the sport. people don't really care about the World Series because it's usually between two regional markets, unless it's the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Dodgers. But if it's not them, it's regional. But if it's something like Derek Jeter, it, like, that's something that the whole country kind of tunes in to see him.
Yep.
So I think that's kind of important to talk about, because that's basically he helps vitalize the industry.
Yep.
You know, he's important to it. So I don't really get the incessant hatred towards him.
I think it was just more like they talked about that so much, and then they didn't even say a word about, like, Tony Gwynn or some of the other people that died. And that was kind of a shame.
That's more on Fox than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Jeter was going to get excessive media coverage for this anyway, just because of, you know, basic marketing. This is their product. This is the main attraction. So obviously they're going to talk about him a lot. But I thought the whole game was just fun. The home run derby was kind of a dud, unfortunately, but I guess that was to be expected with Target Field, except for some of those shots by Giancarlo Stanton in the first round, the one that almost left Target Field, the one that went over the batter side. And Cespedes was a lot of fun to watch too. But
for me personally, I mean, I've gotten to the fight where, or gotten to the point where I honestly don't care that much about the home run derby. Like, it was cool watching Stanton and Cespedes, but yeah. I'd rather watch a mascot fight.
You mean you weren't enthralled by Todd Frazier hitting one home run to go to the finals?
Weirdly, I was not. Sorry, Todd Frazier.
But that one picture of him and Jeter when they were like 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then there was the great groove pitch incident of 2014.
God, that was like the ultimate eye roll.
Yep.
Like, why is this an issue? Why are we like whining about this? No one cared when Chan Ho Park grooved a pitch for Cal Ripken in 2001. And even if Wainwright did groove a pitch, you know, whatever. It's home field advantage in the World Series is so minuscule that it doesn't really matter all that much. I think Grant Brisby made a point in one of his posts about, like, yes, it's a game that counts technically, but it's still played like an exhibition where they're trying to get All-Stars in, because otherwise you would just have, like, Felix Hernandez pitch as many innings as possible, and Clayton Kershaw pitch as many innings as possible.
Yeah. But the thing is, though, it kind of does count, but it's one of those things where you don't realize how much it counts until it does. It's kind of like someone doesn't think that they're going to have a heart attack, so they eat a brownie, and they don't think that it's not that big of a deal, but they keep eating brownies anyway. So they don't realize that moment that what their action is doing is like they're gonna pay for it down the road. They don't realize putting in Charlie Blackmon and Josh Harrison into the game is gonna hurt them now, but it does, because then that manager in the World Series is gonna be like, wait a second, now I'm at a disadvantage.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't count for anything. That's a stupid rule.
No.
They really shouldn't count. But my point is just that, like, even if Wainwright did groove a pitch to Jeter, that was just one hit. Yeah, I don't think you grooved a pitch to, like, Mike Trout or Miguel Cabrera when they were mashing him around in the first inning.
Yeah.
No. I just think my point is it does matter, and if it does matter, they should treat it like it matters.
But they don't treat it like it matters. So.
Exactly, and that's the problem. But I think the weirdest thing is that a league has home field advantage in a game to decide home field advantage.
Yeah. Have coin flips. Competitive coin flips. I saw it on ESPN2 the other day. They had competitive arm wrestling. I think they should have teams arm wrestling.
I've seen college arm wrestling before.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Or you could do this magical thing where the team with the better record just gets home field advantage.
No. That's crazy talk. I mean, I get that, like, the schedules aren't the same, but it's still a better system than, oh yeah, let's use this random exhibition in the middle of the summer with guys like Charlie Blackmon and Fernando Rodney actually making a difference.
And Kurt Suzuki.
Kurt Suzuki, what was he even doing there? So, I mean, again, that's the thing that's okay in an exhibition game, because how you're having some fun with the Minnesota crowd, because Kurt Suzuki and Glenn Perkins were their hometown representatives, and they got to finish off the All-Star game. But, like, if you actually cared about the All-Star game, you would have used Dylan Betances. You would have used Clayton Kershaw for more than one inning. Felix, he'd probably have pitched for seven or something like that. But whatever. I was fine with it.
Yep.
I thought the interview on Fox and like where they made Wainwright apologize was just the most awkward thing I've seen on TV in a while.
Yeah, that was weird. But other than that, it was fun. I think people were just making too big of a deal of everything.
Yep. Which I can't imagine ever happens on Twitter.
Yeah, the internet never makes a big deal about anything.
And I certainly think it was possible that Wainwright was joking about it. I know some writers are like, no, there was no joking in his voice. It's like, well, you're not him, so... You are fishing for a story. Stop.
I mean, no one's ever deadpanned anything before, so...
Nope.
Yeah, this is why we need a game after the All-Star game.
Yeah, I bet if, like, in, like, a post-game interview, if they had asked Mariano Rivera, it's like, is there anything you would have liked to have done during the game? And he's like, yeah, it would have been fun to have play some center field. It's like, Rivera says that Leland screwed up by not putting him in center field. Such is the All-Star game. At least we don't have to talk about it, really, for another year. And next year, I'm sure people will get themselves in a tizzy about some other All-Star stuff. While maintaining they don't actually care about the game, which is...
Yeah.
But another fun thing that happened during the All-Star activities was the Futures game, which, unfortunately, I couldn't watch because I don't get MLB Network, but I've seen clips and saw Luis Severino pitch... And he looked pretty tremendous, and he struck out Joey Gallo, which is just a tremendous feat, and I'm pretty sure that is the only reason he was called up to Double-A Trenton.
Well, it's a tremendous feat, but at the same time, Joey Gallo strikes out like 30% of the time.
Yeah, but still.
It's still awesome, and it was fun to watch him pitch, because, you know, never actually... Because it was funny when I've been following Luis Severino for a very long time now, mm-hmm. I think since, like, the beginning of last year. And at that time, there was only one video of him. That was it.
Yeah.
There was a video that I think Josh Norris took from spring training, and that was it. You'd never seen any, because he was in Dominican Summer League and, like, the Gulf Coast League, and, like, no one had ever seen him before. So it was, like, it was fun to finally see him actually play.
Right. Then he struck out Gallo, and then in Gallo's next to that, he had that ridiculous home run.
That just kept going around the earth.
Yep, but Severino just is killing it, and is he started off the season in Charleston, dominated there, was bumped up to Tampa in the middle of June, and he just destroyed the Florida State League in four starts, and evidently that was enough for the Yankees to be like, yep, bumping him up to Trenton. So they would know better than I. So if they think that he can handle it, they don't normally promote people that quickly, but
yeah,
I assume that, and I think Mark Newman did an interview with Chad Jennings at Aloha recently, and they said that their internal metrics were saying that, yeah, he's for real, and he can take the next challenge. So that'll be fun to see. Also be fun to see the strikeout factory Jacob Lindgren in Tampa.
He's doing what the nickname says.
And then some.
Yep.
Strikeout four in an inning.
Yeah, he's...
That's right.
He is a... He could... I don't know if he will actually be up... in the major leagues by the end of the season, as was originally rumored, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And the fact that he's pitched well enough to make that, like, not sound as kind of far-fetched as it did when he was drafted is kind of a statement to what he's done. And albeit a small sample size, but still.
Yeah, we'll kind of feel what that prediction holds in, like, another month, I feel. If he's, like, pretty much... If he's promoted to Double-A... in the next month, you could say it's possible. But if he's not promoted to Double-A by the end of August, I would say no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has allowed one run in seven innings and has struck out 16.
Yeah, that's pretty decent.
with a whip of 0.5.
I still really like this pick because this is one of those picks that's really like low ceiling but high floor. And if this guy comes up and pitches, like, five innings at all, like, in the next, like, year, it's, like, a success.
Yeah.
Like, how quickly do you get a second-round pick to the major leagues, you know, and actually do something?
Yeah.
It's possible.
But Severino, the Trenton thing, really kind of thrills me, because it'll be fun to see him against in Double A. Those hitters are sometimes close to major league level, so
it'll be
a real challenge for him. And it'll, obviously, pitching in Trenton will help because Trenton's a good pitcher's park, but it'll still be a nice challenge for him.
It's also possible that in 2 weeks he may not be Yankee.
Yeah, that's always the possibility with these prospects in the Yankees. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I wouldn't really want to give him up unless they were getting someone that could help more than just this year, though.
You have to imagine if the Yankees are going to get a decent player, he would have to be included in the package.
Depends how decent. Like,
it has to be a very like a if they wanted like a. Not necessarily Ben Zobrist, but a Ben Zobrist type player.
Yeah, maybe.
He would have to be in the deal. He would have to be in the deal.
Or maybe another team would take like a Gary Sanchez or someone.
Possibly, but he's kind of, his stock is falling, and Severino's kind of the consensus top Yankee prospect right now.
Yeah, him or Judge.
Yeah, Judge is just based off of his ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because he's a really high risk prospect. Just because of how big he is, he has no physical comps. He has a really loopy swing, and you know he could be another strikeout factory, but not in a good way.
I think Keith Law seemed to like his swing. He said that it was kind of compact.
If he can harness his swing, he maybe can lower that risk factor. But his ceiling is huge, but his floor is pretty much nothing.
Yeah, Law said he has a surprisingly short path to the ball for a guy his size and plenty of loft in his finisher power. So, sounds like maybe it's more controlled than it was before. But, obviously, with all these prospects, it's always a possibility to see them traded away at the deadline. Hopefully not, and I think Cashman does have a goal that he doesn't want to, like, give up too much if he doesn't think the deal is right. But,
yeah,
you know, that he didn't want to give away Corey Black last year, and ultimately management's just like, let him go, we're going to get Soriano, so.
And then at the same time, you don't want to be too trade happy with your prospects, but you don't want to get too protective
right.
I mean, just imagine if he wasn't so protective of Eduardo Nunez, the Yankees would have Cliff Lee.
Right. Well, for the half season, anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, still, that's the type of thing, is you can't hold on to them so tightly that you get blinded by the fact that they're usually not going to be that good.
Right. And of course, it's just tough to find a balance in there, because the Yankees do have to, like, they need young talent to get them back to consistently competitive games where they're not trying to beat the run differential, because they don't have any young players coming up.
Yep.
Really, so.
I mean, I think that people say that, and I think it just has to be more supplemental. I mean, there are plenty of teams that have free agents as a piece. Like, the Dodgers have a lot of free agents, but they also have young talent at the same time. Mm-hmm. So they kind of run counter to each other. You have a Puig, and you also have a Greinke. You know, you have, like, Jock Peterson, and you also have a crowded outfield as well with free agents, and, like, Carl Crawford. So...
Carl Crawford, $20 million bench player.
Yeah, so, you know, like, that can happen if you have prospects and you have, like, decent young players, which they do, like Deke Gordon and stuff like that. So I think when people say that, they just think, like, oh, yeah, it's going to be, like, you know, the Marlins, and they're all going to be prospects playing at the same time, like a quad-A team. And I think that that's not exactly what it's going to be. They need, like, two players to be on the major league roster. Or three players, tops. They don't need to have, like, five position players be prospects.
Yeah, and odds are that's what it's going to be like, because it's extremely unusual. People always talk about, like, oh, who's the next core four? That doesn't happen. You can't, like, to get four possible Hall of Famers in one minor league batch. Plus Bernie Williams and other guys.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of see that with, like, Cubs fans when they talk about the whole crop, where they're like, I think there was just an article about their quote-unquote crowded infield, and people are talking about how, like, oh, yeah, we'll have Bryan in right field, and Soler in center, and Alcantara at second, and Baez at short, and, you know, and, like, they're just, like, acting as if they're all going to just play out. and presumably half of them are going to fail.
Yeah, let me tell you about a team called the Kansas City Royals, and who had the best farm system ever in 2010, or so it said. And now they have Sal Perez and Alex Gordon and Eric Hosmer, maybe, but Moustakas, terrible.
Yeah. So that's why it's not always a tried and true plan. I understand. That's why I think that I still think the Jesus Montero trade was a good one.
Oh yeah.
Because that was a good way of getting, even though in retrospect you don't know that he's going to get injured, you know he's going to get injured, but it was a good way of getting like cost controlled young talent to supplement free agents.
Right.
So, and I think how many years of team control does Pena have left? Two.
Something like that. I think he's ARB eligible for the first time after this season.
Well, he's not going to get anything.
Yeah, probably not.
So he'll basically be cost controlled for another two, at least a year or a year and a half. So there's that, and there are also guys like Phelps and like Gardner is going to. Gardner is basically a steal.
Yeah. Well, we can worry about the contracts and stuff later.
Yeah. Just,
It's going. I don't envy Brian Cashman's job at this time because you know that he wants to try to find some way to get some infusion of youth, even if it's just a Gardner type prospect. How they slowly brought him through to just get a guy like that into the lineup, and maybe I think a guy like Ref Snyder is someone who could do that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
hashtag
nice.
Ref Snyder for NYY.
Yes.
Well, it's a lot to go through. I think that'll do it for our main talking points. So we can either go into the tweet bag, or we could do the Matt Ferencik looks up stuff on Playindex.
It's a nice title.
I know.
Yeah. Let's do B-Ref.
Yeah. Let's do that. Maybe I should get like.
Okay.
Maybe I should get like intro music.
Yeah. Well, this week what I looked up was the players who, or the Yankee pitchers who hit the most people in a season. And
AJ
I quickly Burnett. Noticed. Oh, wait for it. I quickly noticed a trend. In first place, 1909, 26 people by Jack Warhop. Second is from 1901, but BRF seems to. Were the Yankees in New York by that time? BRF has also said it's an Oriole, so I'm guessing that was before.
Yeah, they were in Baltimore in 1901 and 1902.
Yeah, 1903 is when they officially started.
Yeah, okay, so first place is Yankee/Oriole, Joe McGinty, who hit 21 people.
Well, they had a couple.
In third is our old friend AJ Burnett.
Of course.
2010, 19 people. And in fourth is the aforementioned Jed Warhop, who hit 18 people in 1910.
Nice.
And then as we continue to scroll, in 7th place is Jack Warhop, who hit 16 people in 1912. In 19th place, Jack Warhop hit 15 people.
I think he had a problem with control.
In 20th, tied for 20th place is Jed Warhop, who hit 12 people in 1915 and 1913. In 26th place is Jack Warhop, who hit 11 people.
Do you know what his Walker 9 rate was, like his career?
2.5.
What?
I guess he just hit people. That was his way of getting people on base. He's just like, well, I don't have good control, so I'm just gonna drill this guy.
His 1913 season is my favorite, because he only pitched 62 1/3 innings and hit 12 people.
My goodness.
He led the lead twice. But two other names who are up there, I just want to mention. Well, actually, first of all, Jabba hit 12 people in 2009. He's up there.
Wow,
that's pretty impressive considering he spent like a little bit of time. No, never mind. He was just started that year. He was a reliever in the playoffs. But yeah, okay, he's a starter.
But tied for 27th with 10 people, or with 10 hit by pitches, is a lot of people. But two of them are tied with 10 hit by pitches. With a bunch of people is Slim Love in 1918 and Hippo Vaughn in 1910.
Oh, man. Slim Love and Hippo Vaughn. Theirs was a bond deeper than baseball.
Actually, Hippo Vaughn did not have a bad career, but
no,
not
I
with
think,
the Yankees with the Cubs.
think I remember his name because one time he and another pitcher matched up for no hitters over 9 innings, and then they were both broken up in extra innings or something like that. Dead ball
yeah,
era.
Fun. With the Cubs, there's a lot of like bolded numbers here, which means he led the lead in. They're all pretty good categories to lead the lead in.
Apparently his stint with the Yankees is just not very good.
No, it was only like it's like 2-3.5 seasons. Actually, the 1 year is pretty good.
Ah, okay.
1.83 ERA, but...
It was like Randy Johnson when he came to the Yankees at the end of his career and was kind of good. And, eh.
Except this is the beginning of Hippo's career.
Oh, well. That's one way to do it, Hippo. I feel like if he had a bad start today, the New York Post would call it a Hippo violation.
Yeah, or something worse.
Actually, his name probably wouldn't even be Hippo. It would probably be whatever.
If he put on weight, Hungry Hungry Hippo?
I was thinking that. Yeah.
Derek Eater. If they were bold enough to do Derek Eater, then I'm sure that they would have no qualms with Hungry Hungry Hippo.
Yep.
Like Photoshop him onto the game board?
Probably.
His actual name is James. That's boring.
No, he is Hippo. I don't care.
You are Hippo. That is... He was a switch hitter. That's odd. Fair pitcher.
Well, sure.
Is that it for the B-Ref?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just like finding out who hit people. It's kind of amusing.
Hey, Plunk, that's why the site Plunk Everyone exists. So... alright, so that's the B-Ref segment. Now we'll move on to the tweet bag. First question in the tweet bag from Sean Run DMC. What are your honest feelings on the Yankees' chances at reaching the second wild card with Tanaka's injury?
Not great.
10% maybe.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think it's a toss-up at this point because I think the second wild card spot is occupied by the Mariners and the AL East lead is the Orioles, and those two teams are only with like a game of each other, so they could be going for, if the Yankees manage to stay in it, they could be going for either, since they're neither the Orioles or Mariners are running away with that last spot.
I think it's just more like 10% for either the second wild card or the division.
It's not great, and it especially hurts because Tanaka's out, obviously, so they're going to need contributions from unlikely sources, and they're definitely going, as we said earlier, they're definitely going to need the offense to show much more life than they did in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the odds would have changed from, like, I'd give them, like, a 25% chance of winning the division with Tanaka, and now probably maybe 10% without. So, I'd say it's a pretty big difference.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say, like, give up, sell everything, because it's one, as we've said before, there's not much to sell. And two, you're pretty close, so you might as well stay in it. So
yeah, one good week and like your odds dramatically change.
Right, right.
Yep.
Also, I think it was funny. I think one time recently, I think it was before the All-Star break, someone had said, written an article. This is one of the main people who covers the team had written an article saying maybe the Yankees should consider selling. Then Sweeney Murdy tweeted in response to that, okay, you be the one to tell Jeter that the Yankees are selling.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, it was one of our articles?
No, not one of our articles. Something written by, like, one of the main people that cover the team.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good point.
Like, it might have been Marchand or Wally Matthews or someone like that.
Yeah. They're not going to sell the last two, especially with the amount of ticket sales and TV ratings.
They're not going to sell. If anything, they'll just decide to stand pat and see
it. Yeah.
I think that would be a big mistake, just because I feel like if they could get McCarthy for Nuno, I feel like they could dig up something.
Yeah.
Unless that's it.
Yeah. Maybe, and I'm sure Cashman will be on the phones over the next few weeks trying to figure out what he's doing.
I'm sure he's been on the phones for the past few weeks already, so...
I'm sure he's been on the phone
since...
Maybe
he's on the phone right now.
I'm sure he's been on the phone since CeCe went down in April.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. From Yankees Forever 777, What are the best moves the Yanks need to make before the trade deadline to improve our chances to win the division or just make the playoffs?
Getting Kershaw for Cervelli and Phelps.
Yes. And I think Tulo for Romine.
Yep, that would be good too.
Okay, so
I think, realistically speaking, I think to answer that question, I think that the best thing, if they are just focused on the winning the division this year, they would go all out for someone like a Ben Zobrist or something like that. They would give like Sanchez and Severino and Judge and just go all in for somebody, and they would basically increase their odds by a heck of a lot. But what I think they're going to try to do is make very small and incremental increases in their odds. They're going to try to give up as little as possible and get as much back as possible.
That's what I see as well.
Yeah, that Nuno and for McCarthy is the perfect example of getting something for nothing.
I mean, maybe you're not going to get absolute steal like that again, but something close to that level.
Yeah, maybe you trade O'Brien for like a decent player.
Yeah.
And some salary relief, and like you just do that. Like that'd be fine with that, you know?
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
And that kind of answers the next question, which was from The Last 42. Put yourself in Brian Cashman's shoes. What would you be looking to do at the deadline?
Yep.
Smartass.
Favorite Kershaw for Phelps and Cervelli.
The smartass answer to that is to sell the shoes on eBay because I now have Brian Cashman's shoes. All right. Next question from a man named Chris T. is King. What do you think is going to happen with the remaining draft picks, namely Cam Warren? What's going on with Christopher Torres and Brian Emery, who are in the international free agent pool? Well, a lot of the draft picks they're not going to learn of their ultimate fate until Friday, which is the signing deadline, beyond what we already know, because some of that news just it's not relevant enough to be leaked. I think a lot of those players will just end up going back to school, or they'll go from high school to college, which is what a lot of these draft picks end up doing, especially guys in the later round like Warren, who I think I've seen on Twitter has already been connected to colleges, and since we haven't really heard updates on him, it's probably going. As for the rest of them, Yankees did their work. They signed, I think any time you can sign all of like your first 10 rounds of draft picks, that's a good start, and they did that. They even signed Andrew Chin, reportedly, who is their 15th round pick. So even if they can't get Garrett Cave, which I don't think they're going to get at this point, he was a 17th round pick, so that means they pretty much got everyone for 16 rounds. So
yep.
So the answer is we don't know exactly beyond the draft pick tracker that I've been maintaining. So, hopefully, we'll sign enough by Friday. But, and as far as the two international players asked about, Torres and Emery, they are still unsigned. So, that's another thing where you wouldn't really necessarily know what these prospects are doing until they actually sign, or until the insiders leak something out.
Yeah.
Because there hasn't really been anything about Emery and Torres beyond the fact that they were linked to the Yankees, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's hard to hear anything because they're not, you know, there just aren't many press releases or anything like that for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, we don't know.
Yep. Okay. Next question from Greg Kirkland. What song do you currently have stuck in your head?
I have the stupid fancy song stuck in my head.
I do, too, because of that Weird Al song.
Oh, I was going to say Tacky. Yeah, by Weird Al.
I haven't listened to that one yet, so...
Hmm?
It's fancy right now.
It'll
I haven't listened to that one yet.
You should listen to Tacky. It's a lot of fun. The parody on Happy, obviously. And the video is pretty great with just random people showing up. I think Jack Black and one of the guys from...
Modern Family
is in it too, yeah.
Yeah.
So, that's what's in my head. Next one from John Irving. What's your favorite way to eat French fries?
Ketchup on the side, normally. I should go for a good cheese fry.
I think everyone could go for a good cheese fry.
Yeah, I usually like them pretty pretty crispy with ketchup on the side, dipping like a normal person. But
yes.
I recently had poutine for the first time when I went to Canada, and that was amazing.
Hmm.
So I would not be averse to having that as well.
Now, what is poutine? I've heard people on Twitter talk about it, but I've never actually looked it up.
Yeah, so it's like a French-Canadian comfort food. And basically what it is it's French fries that are cooked pretty, like, they're cooked pretty crispy until they're kind of, like, brownish. And then they're topped with gravy and cheese curds. And cheese curds are basically just, like, it's just cheese.
So they're kind of like cheese. They're kind of like disco fries.
Yeah, it's a good one. But, like, there are certain places in French Canada that have, like, different places that have different types of poutine. So you could have, like, a full meal, but it's just based around French fries.
Sounds like the pinnacle of health to me.
Yeah, it's incredibly unhealthy. It's just grease. It's all it is. It's just gravy and French fries and cheese.
Well, I know in that thread that John referenced, or that I'm sure inspired John's question, they talked about the crab dip fries that they have at Camden Yards, and those are amazing.
I've never had those, and that sounds great.
They are great. But obviously, that's not readily available, so... I like to have mustard with my fries more, yellow mustard.
Huh.
But ketchup's good too. I don't decline ketchup.
I also like garlic fries that they have at Yankee Stadium. Those are great.
Garlic fries are good, yeah. And cheese fries are pretty much always good, especially late night.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And the last question of our suddenly food focused tweet back. Should putting ketchup on a hot dog be a capital offense? From Aaron Shelby Rose.
And longtime listener says, or just life in prison.
Well, I have to admit that over the weekend, I was at a friend's house, and they didn't have any mustard, and they had hot dogs, and I can't eat hot dogs plain, so I did put ketchup on it. So.
Oh.
It was disappointing, and I knew that Vince Ray Valley would be disappointed if I revealed that.
I would rather have it plain.
But see, the problem with that is that there's nothing. It's just like the hot dog and the bun. So
I don't. I would take it. I just don't like, because the thing is ketchup is like, it's basically just sugar.
Mm-hmm.
It's just putting sugar on top of a hot dog that kind of just tastes like a tomato. But that just kind of tastes gross because it's just very, like, meaty, salty hot dog. And there's, like, this gross tomato sugar mixture on top.
Yeah, it wasn't, like, satisfying. I just kind of, like, went to the burgers after that. But
I think the rule of thumb with ketchup on a hot dog is that if you're a child, it's okay.
You don't know any better.
Yeah, if you're, like, 11 years old and you put ketchup on a hot dog, that's fine. It's kind of like when you eat those smiley face French fries and like dinosaur chicken fingers. That's the equivalent of putting ketchup on a hot dog. But once you graduate to being a person, as a member of our society, you put mustard on your hot dog.
Yeah, that's what I normally put on my hot dog, like Gouldens. I really enjoy on hot dogs, but they didn't have mustard, so it suck.
I go with sauerkraut and mustard. That's every time.
Not a fan of mustard. I'm not really a fan of sauerkraut.
Love it. I love sauerkraut. Yeah. I could literally just eat sauerkraut right out of the can.
How do you take your hot dogs, Meta?
See, I generally go for a burger first, so.
Yeah.
I mean, so do I, but.
You don't really have hot dogs much?
I don't know. I'm not much of a, like, condiment snob. I'll eat whatever.
Yeah.
Except for sauerkraut, I can't do sauerkraut.
I think hot dogs are best. I mean, it's so stereotypical, but they just feel best at like a baseball game.
There are a couple of places where they feel best at a baseball game, from Nathan's, or I absolutely love hot dogs that come from those trucks.
I don't know those trucks.
Oh, you don't know those trucks? Like by me, they're just on the side of the road. They're just hot dog trucks.
Huh.
You pull. It's like on the side of the highway. You pull over to the side of the highway. And it's the truck there. And this guy just has hot dogs sitting in water, basically.
The small trucks, right? The dirty water dogs.
Dirty water dogs, exactly.
No, those are good. There was a guy in my hometown in Jersey who would just have one of those small trucks just sitting on the sidewalk or in the middle of downtown, and those hot dogs were always, I mean, they were like the dirty water dogs, but they were always good, and you get two hot dogs, a can of soda, and a bag of chips for like $4.50. That was really fun.
Yeah.
And what was even better about this guy is that like when customers weren't around and like he wasn't serving anyone, he would like be doing Tai Chi just in the middle of town. He was great. He's still there, I think. I haven't been there in a while, but
yeah, dirty water dogs are great. So those are, I love it. I love Nathan's. I actually was lucky enough to go to the first Nathan's on Coney Island, but the hot dogs were like a dollar extra for each one.
Novelty.
Just because it's the original Coney Island. It's like nothing else is special about it. It's exactly the same as any other Nathan's, except the facade is a little bit nicer, but the inside is some dirty Nathan's.
Yeah.
But
that's our hot dog analysis. our hot takes. Oh boy. Okay. Well, now we're going to move on to Yankee and Mitre of the first half, not just of the week, because of the week would just be like one or two, like one series, I think. So, we're going to do Yankee Mitre of the first half, and then we'll do Yankee Mitre for the AL and the NL. So it'll be a little bit longer than normal, but it'll allow us to expand a little bit beyond just the Yankees. But we'll start with the Yankees. So Matt F., your Yankee of the first half.
I am, of course, joined with Masahiro Tanaka.
Extremely justified.
Yeah.
He was...
Injury amazing. Is saddening, but he was the best player of the first half, and for me, the player I enjoyed watching the most by far.
Yep. That's, like, probably more valuable than anything else, because I generally didn't... I obviously watched this by all the games, but I wasn't, like, heavily invested. I would put the game on, and I'd be, like, just watching in the background as I'm doing something else and just following it along. But, like, when Tanaka was pitching, I would, like, turn on the TV, sit down on the couch. Like, it would be the center of my attention.
Right. Because you're not going to, like, be watching something like, oh, man, gotta see how Vidal Nunez screws up next.
Yeah, I'd be like, all right, I'll put it on the background on the computer.
Hopefully Tanaka comes back. Matt P., your Yankee of the first half.
I'm going to have to go with Brett Gardner.
Also just
because he's just the best position player on the team. Which I still to this day find hilarious, because everyone was saying how it was ridiculous that Brian Cashman didn't trade him straight up for Brandon Phillips. Because, quote-unquote, the Yankees had a glut of outfielders. And since then, we've seen Carlos Beltran explode, Alfonso Soriano turn into a non-entity, and then we see Ichiro Suzuki getting regular playing time like 2013, so...
And Ellsbury being good, but I feel like if you had presented us with, like, the stat lines of Gardner and Ellsbury at the All-Star break, we would have thought... The other one, the lesser one was Gardner, and the better one was Ellsbury. But actually, it's been switched. Ellsbury's still been good, but Gardner's been better.
It just depends. Offensively, Gardner's been objectively better. Defensively, I think it gets a little bit trickier.
Yeah, sure.
Just because I feel like the defensive metrics are not telling the whole story about Ellsbury, and I think that Ellsbury has been better defensively, to be quite honest.
Probably, but I think Gardner has been the better player so far by a hair.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's closer than the metrics would say, but I do think he's been the better player, and he's been extremely fun to watch.
Yes.
Yep.
And he's shown more power, too, which is great.
Yeah, he's already broken his career high at homers, and he's going to get double digits unless he doesn't homer again. Knock on wood. My Yankee the first half will be Dellin Betances, because he's been insane.
Yes, he has.
He has struck out everyone, and I almost can't believe how amazing his turnaround has been, because, you know, he had good AAA numbers out of the bullpen once he became a full-time reliever last year, and I wrote a column in spring training that I was pretty sure that he had a good shot at making the roster and making a serious impact, but no one could have predicted that he would have done this much this quickly. And he looked, his control is even more remarkable, because this is a guy, he was a punchline at Pinstripe Alley just like a couple years ago.
Yep.
Because he walked like 6 for 9 innings or something crazy like that. And all of a sudden, he doesn't walk anyone. And he strikes out everyone, so... And he goes multiple innings, because he's awesome. And I don't know how long this is going to last, but I'm having a lot of fun. And Dylan Betances has been just a treat. So he's my Yankee the first half.
And he also had, like, elbow issues, too, not too long ago.
Yeah, yeah.
He had, like, UCL reinforcement or something. Which is not, you know, insignificant.
Yeah. And he has more strikeouts than, like, a lot of starters, which is just hilarious.
Yeah. He is wonderful.
I kind of want to look up some starters that he has more strikeouts than now, so.
Yeah, I know he had more than, like,
Verlander at one point.
Yeah, he had more than, like, Nathan Eovaldi or something.
Yeah, let me see this.
And, like, Jake Peavy.
Jake Peavy. Whatever happened to that guy? He has more than Pat Neshek, I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
Hot take. He has more than Michael Wacha.
That's right. Well, Mike Wacha's been hurt for a period of time as well.
That's true. Yeah, he's more than Wacha, Eovaldi, Danks, Jason Vargas, Francisco Liriano, Carota, Tim Hudson, who's an all-star, Garrett Cole, who again I think he's missed a little bit of time too, Kyle Kendrick, Alfredo Simone, who's an all-star for the Reds, Chris Tillman. There's a whole bunch of pitchers he has more strikeouts than. He's just a couple behind Dallas Keuchel, who's been terrific for the Astros. He's one behind Gio Gonzalez. Gio's only had 14 starts, but only a few behind Giovanni Gallardo, who has 19.
Yeah, I remember before Yordano Ventura's last start, he had more strikeouts than he did.
Yeah, and Ventura's been really good for the Royals too.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
But yeah, I'm prattling on about Betances, but he's been amazing. So,
yes, he has.
Matt F., your Mitre of the first half.
Vidal Nuno.
Yeah. Goodbye, Vidal.
Yeah, I will not miss you, Vidal.
Later.
Yep. Later, skater.
Unless we talk about him.
Enjoy giving up home runs in Arizona.
Oh, man. And he had the first start where he was actually good. It was weird. And then the next start, he pitched 4 scoreless innings. And then finally, I think Buster Posey slammed him. It's like, thank you,
that
Buster Posey, for bringing us back to normalcy.
And then Madison Bumgarner hit a grand slam.
Yeah, I don't think that was against Nuno, but...
No, it wasn't against Nuno, but it just topped off the hilarity.
And that was his second grand slam of the season. What are you, Madison Bumgarner?
Better than Derek Jeter hitting grand slams.
Yeah. Derek Jeter has won his entire 20-year career, and Bumgarner's like, I got 2 on you, bitch! I think Bumgarner also has more homers than Jeter now, because I think he has 3.
Can we get him and put him at DH?
Yeah, Bumgarner has,
Should be like,
yeah, he's got 3
college
homers.
Players. Should be like college players. I mean, not a pitch, and he could be available to, like, pinch it.
Man, he's got a 140 WRC plus. Granted, you know, in 47 plate appearances, but still.
Wow.
Okay, yeah, I know he's a pitcher, but last year he struck out in 43.5% of plate appearances.
But the thing is, that's not insignificant, though. Small sample sizes for hitting pitchers is not exactly the same, because that makes up like, that's like 20 of his starts, you know.
Yeah.
That's like 2/3 of his batting line right there.
Yeah. Anyway, Matt P., your Mitre the first half.
I don't want to go by who was the worst, but maybe by who had the highest expectations but didn't pan out, and that's definitely Carlos Beltran.
Yeah, you gotta agree.
It's partially not his fault, because, you know, falling over the wall in Tampa, and the bone spur, and the concussion, and the knee, and
everything
else.
Everything.
So he turned
lining
into
a ball off the batting cage into his face.
Yeah, it's just that.
They get concussed.
He's kind of like the equivalent of the Curtis Granderson of this year, where he gets hit in the hand, and then like the day he gets comes back, gets hit in the hand again. So it's kind of like that, where it's just that type of year for him. And I'm hoping he turns it around, because I like Carlos Beltran, but it just sucks, because he should be good. And he is good. Like, it's not reflective of his true talent level.
Yeah, he's in shape, but my Mitre of the first half is CeCe, because he was pretty bad, and then he was gone, and he might never pitch again, and that's depressing, but...
Yeah.
It's hard to blame him for the injuries, but, I mean, they still happen. They were still disappointing, so I still think... I have to put that on CeCe. That's an... Alas. All right. So we'll move on to we'll do the NL first. So Matt F, you're Yankee of the first half in the NL. We'll say Bonds of the first half.
I'm going with Troy Tulowitzki.
Oh, yeah, he is. He needs
Jeter lover, and he's destroying the baseball.
He wants to be in New York so badly. Come on, get it done, Cash.
You can have that Cervelli Phelps package, Rockies.
Well, even toss in Romine. And he's been pretty incredible even away from Coors Field. But even, you know, yeah, at Coors Field, he's hitting 417, 497, 748. Which, you know, Coors Field, but still, what? He's been ridiculous. Matt P., your Bonds of the first half.
Does this have to be the National League or anybody?
Yeah, the National League.
National League. I'm going to have to go with Clayton Kershaw because, he's just the best pitcher in baseball. Yep.
Been the best pitcher in baseball for like 3 years now. And you know, he had the no-hitter where there was just the error. Then he threw, what, like 30 straight scoreless innings, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, granted, I think that King Felix is definitely up there.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's pitching out of his mind right now.
Mm-hmm. But I think, talking about body of work over the past few years, I think I'd take Kershaw.
Yeah, I mean, Felix is on pace to have like a kind of like a Pedro-esque season.
Yeah.
But Clayton Kershaw is still just the better pitcher talent level-wise, and he's showing it because he's being great.
And he's only had like one bad start, too. I think, obviously...
It was against the Diamondbacks. Yeah.
The ultimate... Small sample size. Why is this happening?
Yeah, it's like because baseball. That's what it was.
Yes, baseball gonna baseball. Okay. So my Bonds of the first half is Andrew McCutchen. He's been pretty excellent for the Pirates. He's kind of like Tanaka with the Yankees. I think he's the main reason the Pirates are still in the race. They've been getting some contributions from other players, but McCutchen's still the standout, and he's put up incredible numbers this season. And actually, his WRC plus is better than Tulowitzki and only a couple points behind Trout. Very quietly.
Yeah.
But he's hitting 324, 420, 575 with 17 homers.
And that's
would also consider giving them the Cervelli Phelps package.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could win.
His contract is crazy. Like, crazy great for the Pirates.
Oh, yeah, he signed it, like, the season after he was Rookie of the Year or something like that. And he's only getting, like, $50 million or something like that.
He's getting $50 million with one option year, and he's, like, it ends in 2018.
Yeah, and that's probably, like, after he turns 30.
Yep. So, the Pirates got the biggest deal, like, ever.
Yeah, that is incredible deal. Okay, Mitre of the NL. The uni of the the uni of the first half. Matt F.
I will give it to our old friend Chris Stewart, who's hitting 238, 330, 250.
Whoa, that on base percentage though.
Yeah, he's walked 9 times, which how?
How do you walk Chris Stewart?
Yeah.
Is he, Have we heard reports of him, like, gasping for water?
I don't know. We should check on that.
Yes. I know sometimes, as Greg noted, Chris would be drinking sand, trying to sustain himself, but he can't do it. All right, Matt P., your Mitre, or Uni of...
Mine is...
Your Uni of the NL, of the first half.
Yeah, mine is Dominic Brown.
Oh, God, yeah.
Negative 1.2 F4 in 91 games. He's batting 227, 279, 329, 66 WRC plus, and just horrendous defense to boot.
That is fear.
He's just flat out bad.
Hmm. And he was like an all-star last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was pretty good. It's because he's not good defensively, but his, like, hitting-wise, he's pretty good. Like, was pretty good.
Right. And now he's not even doing that.
Because he hit, like, 27 home runs last year. Now he has, this year he has 6.
Yep. All right.
So, yay Phillies.
My uni of the first half is, the one and only Padre, Jed Jerko. Signed to a $35 million 6-year extension in the offseason. He has promptly rewarded them with a first half of 162, 213, 270. A 35 WRC plus and that minus 1.2 FR. Which is just so fierce that I can't even handle it. Bravo to you, sir.
He's a real jerk. Go.
Yeah. Another Sesame's barbecue reference. Hey, Judd Jerko. Whatever. You gotta take your money and play like shit.
And he got an extension.
Yep. Man. Potters just don't have luck with extensions. At all. Okay. Now we'll move on to the AL. So, Matt F., your Ruth of the first half.
I will go with Michael S. Troutington.
That is... I am stunned by this choice. Stunned.
He is quite good at baseball.
Yeah, he is... I don't even know how...
He could be, there's just no physical
I don't get
comparison.
How he could be so much better than everybody else. And it's not even close.
Nope.
And now he's getting better.
Yeah, I'm really afraid of when he has like a 15 WAR season.
And he's 22. Like, he was the youngest All-Star.
Yeah, oh, it just gets to that point where, like, there's no precedent for any of this. So, like, he's that type of player. Like, the projection system just breaks for him. Like, there are only two types of players that happens for: Mike Trout and Bartolo Colon. They either have to be really young or really old, and Mike Trout is breaking the projection system because there are no 10 WAR 22-year-olds. Just, they don't exist.
Nope.
I mean, he could legitimately be a college player.
Yeah. Or he could, if he went to college, he would have just been drafted, like, a year or two ago, and maybe he'd be a rookie this year or in, like, Double A or something.
Yeah. So let's imagine for a second that Mike Trout decides he doesn't want to go to Major League Baseball and plays in college for 3 years. What would you project at a D1 like school, maybe SEC team? What do you think his batting line would be? He's a 10 WAR player in Major League Baseball. What do you think he would be in like a D1 baseball school?
700, 900, 1400.
Yeah, I would imagine it had to be close. And he'd probably have a home run almost like every game.
It would probably be like those ludicrous high school triple slashers you see from these guys that become major league players. And better
yeah,
than
except,
that.
Except it would be like, you know, kind of like Babe Ruth playing, or Mickey Mantle playing college baseball.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I got this new recruit. Yeah, I think his name is Willie Mays. I think he can play a little bit.
Yeah, so I can imagine that he would probably hit like 700... and hit like a home run like every single, he'd probably hit like 20 home runs in the season.
Yeah. Alright, Matt P., your Ruth of the first half in the AL.
I'm gonna have to go with Felix Hernandez, cause oh my god.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's exactly sustainable, but it's amazing.
Right, he's only allowed like a couple home runs, but
he's allowed 34 earned runs in 144 innings. He's only walked 1.56 per nine. And he's only allowed like 5 home runs.
What a crazy person.
I mean, it's probably the first season too, one of the first seasons where he actually, like, I don't really care about the win-loss record, but his win-loss record is actually like representative of how good he is.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's ecstatic to be playing on a team that's actually in the hunt for the playoffs too. Considering he's been the face of the Mariners for like 10 years now, and they've never really even sniffed it other than a couple of fluky seasons. I think Jeff Sullivan or Matthew Carruth, one of those guys that used to be on Lookout Landing, that said this would be the Mariners' first season with a positive run differential since 2003.
Wow.
Yikes.
Yeah, they've had a couple over 500 seasons since then, but I think they were slightly negative run differential, but they're finally a good team.
Yeah, and he's pitching, I mean, he's projecting to have like an 8 WAR season, which is like, I mean, when you have an 8 WAR season as a pitcher, you automatically kind of ticket yourself into the Hall of Fame. And I think this is kind of the season that will cement himself as a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I think he was already on that track, and he's not even 30 yet. I think he's 28 or something.
Yeah. He's 28, and he just turned 28 like 3 months ago. So this is age 28 season. So he's still like, he's at his peak now, and he's probably going to have like 2 or 3 more seasons like this.
Right. I think sometimes people forget, because it feels like he's been around for a while, but that's because he came up when he was like 19. Okay, so my Ruth of the first half in the AL, I'm going to go with Jose Abreu, because he's... It's not like the most typical pick, but he's just been mashing. He has 29 home runs already, and he was on the 15-day DL at one point too, and he's a rookie.
Yeah.
And I think people thought that he would bring power, but no one expected this much power this soon.
No.
Yeah.
So, bravo to you, Jose Abreu. I'm very curious to see how many dingers you will hit. I might argue that it's actually even more surprising than Nelson Cruz randomly hitting, like, 28 homers or whatever.
Yeah, I think people expected Abreu to hit 30, like, in a whole season.
Right. Now, well, like, some people maybe thought that Cruz would probably benefit from playing in Camden Yards, and he'd do pretty well. I don't think anyone expected 28 homers through the first 93 games, but...
No.
No one expected Abreu to already be at 29 homers. So, Jose Abreu, that's my pick. I realize there are some players better than him by WAR, but I just think that's remarkable. He's, with Tanaka out, he's the clear Rookie of the Year front runner, I think.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree.
Mercy, as Hawk would say. Alright, Matt F., we're gonna go with your Nunez of the first half in the AL.
I very much wanted to give it to Nunez, but he hasn't been bad enough.
I know.
So instead, I will give it to Nick Swisher.
Oh my god.
Nice.
He is... I don't know.
Bad.
He's crashed.
Yeah.
I know some people were hand-wringing last year when the Yankees decided not to re-sign him, and I admit, I was also in, like, I don't know if I would have re-signed him to that contract, but it was still weird not to even see the Yankees go after him. But man, I'm glad he's not there now. You were reading his triple flash?
Yeah, 208, 288, 348, -1 WAR.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yay.
But he's swishalicious.
He did the Ohio State cheer thing after hitting a home run once.
Bro-Ohio.
Yeah, mayor of Bro-Ohio.
Bro-Ohio is not a very cheery place right now. All right, Matt P., your Nunez of the first half in the AL.
Mine is Jose Molina.
Oh, man, he is the light.
He's at the funniest batting line of any player. He's batting 195, 239, 201. It's funnier. With a 28 WRC+. He has 0 home runs and 5 RBIs. He has an isolated power of 0.007.
That's how you do it.
And I think he has two extra base hits the whole season.
And he didn't have any until, like, the end of June or something like that.
Yeah. So, and his defense has obviously been good, and his pitch framing has obviously been good, but he's not. He's hitting so badly. And he also has a strikeout percentage that's, like, the highest of his career, and it's, like, 24.2%.
Fierce.
And his walk rate is down to 5%, so doing all the things you don't want to do.
Wow, that is not how you do it.
And what's very funny is that every projection system says that he's going to hit exactly one home run at the finish of the season. So I'm really hoping that he doesn't hit that one home run.
You're just like, you can do it. You can do it, Jose.
It'll be like the last game, like when A-Rod hit the grand slam that he got to,
Oh, so he gets a 30 home runs and 100 RBI.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be at the last FI of the season.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
That man hit the last home run at Yankee Stadium. I love that so much.
And he only has 39 career home runs.
There was a great quote.
And he's been playing.
There's a great quote from Babe Ruth. So he hit the first home run at Yankee Stadium. I'm very happy to hit the first home run. Lord knows who'll hit the last. And then probably he found out Jose Molina is like, ooh, really? Oh, okay.
Ooh. He's been playing since 1999, and he has 39 career home runs.
And somehow he lined it up.
Yeah, he's going to line it up in a season in which he only hit 3 home runs.
Wow. Well, who's my Mitre of the first half going to be? I feel like I'm not going to make it Michael Choice, but I do need to mention that he's minus 1.8 FWAR.
Yeah, that's definitely worth it.
And I'm not going to give it to him just because no one knows who Michael Choice is, and that's not fun. So I'm going to give it to Justin Verlander just because he is making that contract extension the Tigers gave him look awful. Just terrible. Because he is, at this point, he's 31. He's signed through 2019, and he's posted a 121 ERA minus and a 101 FIP minus. So he's only been okay by FIP, and he's been bad by ERA. And he's not striking out anyone anymore.
I mean, I don't think he's actually that bad, though. I think that's just...
Probably not, but I don't really like him personally, so I'm going to pick on him. Like that, like when after when the A's traded for Zamarja, they're like, they're finally trying to beat us. It's like, shut up, Verlander, you're terrible right now. I really hope the A's can break through if the Yankees can't do it.
Yeah,
I feel so bad for Billy Veen, because he really needs to have at least, like, a pennant by now, and, like, he should have had one, but...
Yep. He deserves it, but it's baseball, so...
If not only shut up to people who are like, oh, well, what is Moneyball on? Nothing! Except all the teams adopting the strategies from it and winning championships. Nothing!
It's bunk in the playoffs. Whatever that means.
Joe Morgan. They need to. Their strategies didn't work. They have to be able to move the runners over and sacrifice flies and stuff. That ended in a weird place. It always comes back to Joe Morgan.
And hopefully Brandon McCarthy is listening and smiles.
Hi, Brandon McCarthy. Tocconi, I said hi.
Apparently he was inspired by Sabermetrics by www.firejoemorgan.com.
Of course it was. That was a great website.
It was.
Okay. Well, we're running a little bit long, so I think we'll wrap it up for this edition of the Pinstripe Alley podcast. Hopefully next week we'll be able to talk about the Yankees getting off to a good start in the second half, getting back to the AL East race. They're 5 games back now, but not out of it yet. So, You can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. You can follow the GIFs account at Yankees GIFs. Or not Yankees GIFs, excuse me. That changed a while ago. You can follow our GIFs account on Twitter at PSA_GIFs. Follow me on Twitter at MernsPSA. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. You can follow Matt Provenzano on Twitter at his new handle, MattProv94. And like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. Rate and review us on iTunes. We always appreciate your feedback. And send in your questions to the tweet bag whenever I post the fan shot for that information. Always love to answer your questions because it really helps us figure out what you want to hear us talk about, whether it's the draft class or hot dogs. I'm fine either way.
I'm cool talking about hot dogs.
Yes. Do you have anything else to add, guys?
No, I'm all hot dogged out.
Nope. Okay. So, for the Mats, I'm Andrew Mearns. Thanks for listening. Have a good night.